Okay, so let's get started here, and Grandmaster Smith and I are coming to you from about 2 miles from Mount Rushmore. So you'll hear about 10,000 Harley Davidsons in the background. So it's kind of an entertaining ambiance for everybody today, but hopefully that won't get in the way of being able to hear and absorb and ask questions and be interactive as thoroughly as possible. And we have Senior Master Moody in the background, muted, unable to get unmuted. Star 6 for everybody who wants to ask questions and interact. Star 6, mute your phone and also unmute your phone. And Mr. Dunn, you might check on Master Moody's line and see if you can unmute him from your PC there, since I'm not at a computer. I'm standing over my my Harley as we speak, trying to move us. Anyway, so I hope everybody can hear me, and Master Moody and Mr. Dunn, if you can confirm that we've got a clear signal. And Bob, I think you're muting and unmuting my line as moderator here, so. So good, we're good to go. Anyway, but to get started here, I did have some questions, and as we're getting our various participants dialing in here and tuning in, I wanted to point out a couple things for everybody as well, just so we're in good shape. We are coming up to the Martial Arts Marketing Boot Camp, over at Martial Arts Marketing Boot Camp, and our Inner Circle and Peak Performance meeting, and the meetings are going to be, or the boot camp, I guess I should say, is going to be next week on Friday and Saturday, and on Thursday afternoon, we also have a special trip over to the United States Olympic Training Center for everybody who wishes to participate in that. So that'll be at the at 4:30, and then the boot camp is going to be all day on Friday, Saturday. We're still working with Air Force Academy to try to do a little behind the scenes of Air Force Academy. So that should happen sometime on Friday or Saturday, and then we will go from there. And on Sunday, for about two-thirds of the day, we're going to have our inner circle meeting before everybody flies out, mostly on Sunday night. So anyway, so if you are not RSVP'd to that, please fax in your RSVP or call Bob at the office at 727-540-500, extension 202, and give us a definite RSVP one way or the other. We do need a pretty good head count. We need an head count for the Olympic Training Center. We need a head count for the hotel. We have a couple of different rooms we could use, depending upon how many we have confirmed. And of course, Inner Circle Peak Performers, you're welcome to bring as much staff as you like. But, Grandmaster Smith, did you want to interview with us? He's working in the background, and, Master Smith, if you manage to get yourself some music and join the line, let me know if it's home. But, hey, I do have some questions with an email, and I always appreciate, people emailing questions ahead of time so I can be, a little bit prepared before we do these calls. And what I want to remind everybody of is that you can get star 6 and unmute at any time. And what I want this call to be, and most of the calls, to be as interactive as possible. So what we want to do is make sure any questions you have is taken care of. But anyway, the first question that I had that had been emailed to me by Gallo And Jay, interesting question, and I want to address. Okay, now you got dropped out of the call. So we're gonna get started here strong. If I could beg everybody's patience for about 30 seconds, let me see if I can fix another problem going on with our conference line, and I'll be right back. Okay, and we do have Grandmaster Smith here. So, hey, Grandmaster Smith, give everybody a little update on our excursion here while I get Bob on the line.
Okay, well, we've got Mark Glazer and Rob Whitmore. For those of you who don't know Mark Glazer, he was... teaching with me when I was running the June Reed School for a number of years, and then he ended up starting his own school, and he's still to this day the only school to ever take his company public on the New York Stock Exchange. If you can hear the background noise of the motorcycles, we're actually at Keystone, right at the base of Mount Rushmore. We can look up from Keystone and see Mount Rushmore. So we're doing the call and have a lunch down here, and then going to head up to Mount Rushmore. But Mark Glazer, again, was the first and the only that I know of school to take his company public and made billions off of it. And another interesting background, The Wolf on Wall Street, the book was Mark's college roommate when he was at American University, going to school when he was in Washington, D.C., with us in the June Reed system. And
yeah.
For those that didn't see the movie or the book, it makes for interesting reading.
And actually, but, according to Mark, the first IPO in that that they showed in the movie was the Master Glazer Karate IPO. They didn't actually say that in a movie, but according to Mark, that was what was going on there. We should have six. If anyone wants to ask questions, if you have star six and you're included into the call, star six out. So if you have any background noise, and amazingly considering, Jeff, what are there conservatively 30,000 Harleys within a 1 hour radius at least. I've got pretty decent background noise here. But Master Smith, now we've got our conference line solution solved, and I think we have Master Moody here with us, and we have Bob Dunn with us. And I had some questions that were submitted ahead of time. I'd like to make sure we get to those, and then like to make sure Master Smith, while we have you captive. This is Jay, who is longtime martial artist, new school owner. He's in Detroit, looking for a lease for a startup, and he was listening to is it Brandon Beliso, who I know tangentially. I don't know him very well. I believe I helped him with his school a few years ago for a little while, but he had listened in to a podcast or something with Brandon, and Brandon had four or five of the rest comments in this that Jay was curious about. The recommendation was not to do contracts. And Brandon's comment was that if your service is good enough, you don't need people on contract. That they just have them pay month to month should be good enough because they'll never want to leave. There's three or four other points like that. But let me have you address that first, Master Smith. What do you think of that? You know, you sign up, it's month. You need 30 days notice to cancel. You can cancel your contract whenever you want. Did I lose you?
What was that question for me, Master Oliver?
Yeah, I was gonna.
You're breaking up a little bit, so. I heard the yell, but I didn't hear what you said after that.
Well, the question was, a recommendation was no contract. Cancel 30 days notice anytime you want. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that's fine as long as your landlord's going to give you the same deal.
Okay.
And I haven't found a landlord yet who will give you that deal. And I know I wouldn't want a deal like that because I wouldn't know if I'm going to be in business next year. If I don't have a contract with the student, the whole business system in this country is based on commitment. You know, there's leases for cars, there's leases for houses, there's mortgages, there's commitments. And this way is what makes the American economy go. People are used to doing that, so they don't have a problem with it. Sometimes you might have to take them into shorter increments until they're confident that you have what they want to get, you know, that you can deliver what you're saying. And if you do, then nothing wrong with making that commitment. You want everybody to be a black belt. It's kind of like going to college and not getting your degree.
Yeah, and to build on that, I would answer that in a couple of different ways. First of all, I was, which is always a bad idea, by the way, but I was watching a couple of the, you know, martial arts business, also ran little discussion forums and paying attention to some of that. Had nothing better to do because, you know, everybody on a Facebook group now and have them all start sharing your opinion and you get a whole lot of bad opinions. But one of the guys had gone through this long rationale about why he shouldn't do contracts and why he didn't like contracts and why contracts were bad and why he didn't need them because he won't spend, you know, like sue anybody anyway and all this rant. And then he said in the next breath, but I have a real problem because I have about 30% of my students who want to just cancel their membership in June and start it again in August because they, you know, they're going to be gone and they don't want to pay for something they're not getting. And see, that's the first part of the double-edged sword is you want. What we are is we're a private school that has an outcome, and the outcome is to get a degree. As we've most of us define it, is a black belt in 4 years, or maybe 8 or 9 or 10 years, but it's to get your black belt initially. And if you don't have students make the commitment, and you only have them commit to come 30 days at a time, they have all kinds of things that get in the way, and then they want to cancel their contract, or their, you know, it's not a contract, they want to cancel their payments, I guess is the way to say it. And the second element is, so you decide they shouldn't do contracts. They do it for one of two reasons. They either think that I'm never going to be a good salesperson, quote unquote, so therefore I shouldn't have, if I don't have, more people will sign up because all they're committing to basically is for a month. And so the biggest problem I have in my sales process is people don't want to make a quote unquote long-term commitment. Well, if I don't make them make a long-term commitment, then I don't have any problem with, you know, making the sales, right? And so that's the logic that they have. And it's part of the conversation on Jay's next question, by the way. But so they will think that if I get rid of everything that I have to be good at, quote-unquote, selling, that I'm going to be better off and that things will be smoother. And the thing is, you don't get away from selling, period. And having a higher conversion rate at the enrollment, if it leads to a higher attrition rate, or it leads to things like a 30% reduction in your revenue for the summer, or any of those other alternative consequences, is false numbers. I can have a 100% conversion rate if they're paying a low price, or they're not committed, or I have problems with all this other stuff. It doesn't make any difference, right? So when it comes to, and again, this is not meant as a disparagement of Brandon specifically, seems like a nice guy, fairly sharp, but a problem that we see is so many times when somebody comes in to work with us is if they're a learner and they're eager, they've gone out and they've listened to free podcasts and they've, you know, watched YouTube videos and maybe they've been a member of three or four different things. And by the time you're done, they have this mismatch of crap that they're doing in school that put it all together doesn't work very well. And clearly the advice of don't do contracts is I think is really bad advice. And Smith, obviously you agree. Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to add something to that. There's really three things that I mention when most of the people on the call probably do contracts because they're working with us, but the way they allow weird cancellation options, like, you know, they give everybody a 2-month right to cancel, 3 months. It's very strange, and that's something we should, you know, maybe a topic for a different day. But I think I just taught a seminar Saturday for students at one of my schools, and I asked the parents. I said, if your kids could go to school, and it wasn't in the United States, it's mandatory. You know, you get in trouble if you don't send your kid to school. You're a truant, and you be in trouble as a parent if you don't send your kid to school. So if it wasn't mandatory and the kids didn't know they had to go to school, would all the kids go to school, even the ones that like it? They'd wake up someday and feel like they didn't want to go. So even, you know, we think, well, school is different from what we do. It's really not. It's just the parents have to make a choice to make a commitment, not the government, essentially, in our culture that we have. But the other thing, after Oliver, I'd say is I've never seen a school ever that gave either month-to-month, didn't do contracts, they were month-to-month, or gave an easy cancellation option, like you can just let us know in 30 days or 60 days and we'll cancel your contract. I've never seen a school like that actually have a better sales close rate than a school that's solid on their contract. So the assumption that I don't do sales well, so there I want to have a better conversion rate, so I'll give them a weak contract or I'll give them no contract. I've never once seen that work better than having a solid contract. So it's not like it improves your conversion rate if you don't have a contract. That's the crazy part about it.
Well, and some of these things, it's like price points, is a lot of times you end up with, when you water down your system, with, let's say, the same conversion rate, but sometimes what you didn't get the ones who were more solid, and you got a few more that were flakier, and the overall effect on the new student base
is to have enrolled a lower quality group of people to begin with. I mean, that's what happens when you lower your price. Is it's not that your conversion rate goes up, it's that you enroll, in some cases, different people than you would have enrolled before, and you're now enrolling the lower quality ones and losing some of the higher quality ones. But let me go back to Jay's question overall, and let me read through the whole question, because I have it here in front of me now. He says, I was listening to a podcast by Brandon Beliso. He mentions how he videos each class, and it's a video for parents to open on a smartphone or at home to review what little Joey needs to practice. And Jay says, I think that's a great idea. Do we have anything like that? And then the second part of the question is, furthermore, he is anti-upgrade, anti-belt test fees, anti-year-long contracts. And he says that he just has a high price for $29 a month, and that he believes that the service should be so good that you don't need to sell it. And Jay says, I agree, the service should be good. Well, in this, let's answer the video question first. You know, on the face of it, I think that's a great idea. On the underneath piece of it is you've got radios. And if I had, you know, Rob Wetmore, who's with us, is playing with this little GoPro camera, and it's really cool. You can he's got it on the front of his motorcycle, but you can set up the video, and it's got Wi-Fi, and you can upload it for Wi-Fi, and you can do all this stuff. And we have a lot of schools who now are fully internet-friendly with video cameras everywhere, and parents will be at home, and they can log in and watch the class, things like that. All that stuff is really cool. And none of it is a negative, meaning you put all that kind of stuff in and you start having the, you know, live video feed at home and you send them a video link. None of that stuff is going to hurt you. There's in no way we're enthusiastic that would I say that it's counterproductive. On the other hand, I can't really see me as a parent going home and rewatching a 45-minute a class of my 6-year-old or 12-year-old, thinking that I was going to get something valuable of it. Now, if you sent me a video link of the instructor doing a little mat chat with the character development lesson that I wanted to go home and replay and basically our Done For You leadership program is exactly that, except we're doing it for you and providing, people like Colin Powell or Tony Robbins and so forth to do those little things. But if it was a 2 or 3 minute man chat and with, instructions to the parents, hey, how about if you guys, watch this for 2 or 3 minutes daily for the week to anchor it. And I think that'd be very useful if it was a little video clip of one of the, if it's a kid's class, one of the 10 or 12 year olds doing the form or the instructor walking through how to do the form they're trying to learn. I think that'd be very helpful to go and tape a 45 minute or an hour class every day and upload the link and send out the link. You can go watch the class. I think while it's a cool idea, it's wasted effort because I can't see how that's going to be useful to people. Again, sending them small chunks of pieces of curriculum, of mat chats, of different things is very useful, and we've done that for years. So, again, you videotape the instructor doing the mat chat, or you send them the link to the materials that we're providing you. You send them a link of a couple of physical lessons this week that are 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes. You send them a little link of the physical curriculum that you're working on this week for what you want them to review at home. All that kind of stuff would be very, very helpful. And by the way, nowadays it's extremely useful. You know, this little GoPro camera, I haven't played with it myself, but it's $300-$400. And it'll do all of that stuff extremely efficiently. The other options, of course, are endless for video capture, and you can upload to YouTube or any one of the other hosting sites. We have a video link to share, and it's a great idea. Going further into this question, though, is this, Brandon is anti-upgrade, anti-belt test fees, anti-year-long contracts, and he says he just has a high price point, meaning $229 a month, and he believes the service should be so good that you don't need to sell it. See, here's the biggest piece of this whole thing that I take exception to. The service should be so good you don't have to sell it. It's complete and utter bullshit. Excuse the language. And here's why I say
and Master Oliver, hello, this is Jay. Just wanted I got into the call kind of late, but thank you for addressing my question. And the only part that I when I say I agree, I'm only saying that I agree about the, and I think everyone's on board here, is our service should, you know, our customer service should be phenomenal. But the rest of it is, you know, this is what he said. I just wanted to get everybody's thoughts on that, and, of course, yours as well. I'll listen now.
Well, and that's great, Jay. And feel free to ask any additional questions or soon to tweet this. But what I wanted to point out is, see, here's the thing is, And Jay, you're an attorney, so this is very much like hiring an attorney, right? If I have a legal matter, my perception of whether the attorney was good or not is mostly formed after the fact, right? I had a criminal thing that needed to be, not that I did, but you know, this criminal thing you need to be dealt with. It came to a good resolution, it came to a bad resolution. You have a civil conflict, you have came to a good resolution or a bad resolution, right? And through the process, and ahead of time, the only way you know that a martial arts teacher, an attorney, a CPA, a surgeon, you can go down the list of all the different services. The only way you know that they're any good up front is either you found them through referral. So somebody whose opinion you respect had a positive experience with this person, and they're telling you that they're really good. And so now they've had either, like, you know, in the case of an attorney, they've had a case that with an outcome that they had a result with, or in the case of martial arts, they had a child, or, you know, maybe they were an adult, but they were in lessons for 6 months or 12 months or 18 months, and they really haven't enjoyed the school, that type of thing, right? So it's through referral, or it's through us manufacturing that same experience through testimonials and other feedback that's third hand, and it's sharing that perception and that feeling through copy and description and explanation, right? And I don't care what word you use for it, but Master Oliver there?
He might have muted us to take care of something. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, no, I bet. But going back to what I was saying is that you never get out of meeting to sell what it is we're doing. And unfortunately, artists, I don't care whether it's painters or it's musicians or whatnot, and people who provide a professional service, CPAs, attorneys, one thing, they all want to get out of having to sell, right? The reason they think that selling is a dirty thing, that you know, providing their service is somehow uplifting, and selling somebody on their capabilities is a bad thing. And it's just a weird fallacy that goes with that. And so it's certainly true that in year two, year three, year four of a student's experience, the service can be so spectacular that they're sold on you, the school, the family environment, the quality of the curriculum, the quality of the outcome, the impact that you're having on their lives, without them having to be told about it by you, right? But that doesn't happen to the general community to get them into your school, and it doesn't happen to somebody you've had a one-class interaction with to get them enrolled. And frankly, if I've been in your school for a month or two, it's a component of the renewal or the upgrade, but it really isn't the key determining factor, because you know, if I've had four weeks with you and I've had a good experience, then that's not enough for me to be convinced that I'm going to have exactly the same experience that's only going to get better for the next 4 years. But I can make that decision because
I see lots of happy black belts, and I see lots of other people who have accomplished an awful lot with the school, and I see advanced classes and a lot of quality people who are happy. You know, I can go through, and all of that is part of the sale. And so anytime some martial arts guy tells you you don't need to be good at sales, if you're so good at your service, people will flock to you, and you never need to learn how to sell because your service is going to be so exemplary that people are just going to sense it intuitively, and you're not going to have to get good at persuading them that this is a long-term value for them. It's either they're completely ignorant, or they're telling you what you want to hear. You have to get really good at it. And again, the word sales, persuasion, leadership, marketing message, I mean, they're all interchangeable. You've got to get really good at verbally and in writing, through audio, through example, through all kinds of different sources, showing them and proving to them that what you're doing is extremely valuable. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, of course.
So,
can I add something on the video, Master Oliver? I just wanted for completeness. You had said that
you're
okay to do the videos. I would never send an uncurated video to anybody because there's too many chances that the instructor, you know, there could be a miscommunication about the kid fell down and the instructor picked him up or something, and the video could make it look like there was some impropriety or something. I would never send anything out unless I already knew what I was sending out and reviewed it. So I would not just send raw video. That's just me. I'm a little, you know, I don't want to put myself at any risk or provide information that might be problematic later. So I don't know if anybody agrees with that or not, but that's just my view on it.
Yeah, Matt, were you done?
Yeah, I was done on that. I just wanted to include that.
Yeah, and I agree. The a lot of this stuff is, and I've been through every iteration over the years with my own schools and with obviously the hundreds, if not thousands, I've worked with. But there's a lot of these things that sound good on the surface, but then you think about it, and, you know, again, I mean, I'm a parent with two kids who are doing martial arts lessons, and even if I wasn't already kind of educated on what this all, I wouldn't be going home and watching them in class for an hour. I mean, I periodically might send, you know, to their grandparents the link to watch, you know, watch either one of the kids in class. And we have a lot of background noise again. Again, I'll remind everybody, hit star 6 and you mute yourself. And then star 6 again, you unmute. And I think the only background noise I have is now about 22 Harleys getting ready to head down the road here. So if you hear what sounds like rolling thunder, that's what it is.
And Master Oliver, if I can interject there.
You bet.
You know, when it comes to contracts, I find there's absolutely 99% no problem. If you put them through some kind of trial program, which can be anywhere from 3 lessons to 2 weeks, and in those 3 lessons and 2 weeks, you teach them, and that's when you're selling yourself, you're selling your program, you're selling your benefits. And if they see that, and if you've done it right, and I don't mean selling in the office, trying to talk them into putting the money down. I'm talking about the whole process. Because when they walk into the office at our school, they're 95% sold already. They want to do it regardless of the price. And the more excited you can get them, the less price will matter. And commitment is about what you explain to them about why they need to do it for X amount of time. And if you explain that to them properly, they have no problem. In our school, we have absolutely no problem getting 95% of the people to commit to 1 year. And then in that 1 year, we have in the next 30 to 90 days, we are converting 70. Last year we had an 80% conversion rate. We're probably running 70 now. And we're doing about a 70% conversion rate of bumping those guys up
to the black belt program, either a 4-year master club or a 6-year leadership program. And to be honest with you, 90% of them are doing leadership. The only reason somebody wouldn't do a leadership is because they're not going to be there. They're moving in 4 years. And we've even solved that on some issues because we know where they're moving, so we work out a transfer for them. But the bottom line is, are you explaining the benefits? Are you explaining why our school has to make a commitment? Because that's what the program is teaching them. It's teaching them how to set goals and how to stick with them. You don't teach them that life lesson, then they're never going to be successful in anything they do in life. So don't forget, there's someone in jet landed somewhere.
Yeah.
And that was the mess with the motorcycle.
Exactly.
But I just wanted to interject that part.
No, and that's exactly right. And, you know, maybe said even more simply is there's only three components when you break it down to the macro level on the school. How many new students you're bringing in on a monthly, annual basis, whatever the time period you want to think of. How many of them are renewing into longer and higher programs, and what your retention rate is like. And the quality of the service is going to have a dramatic impact on the retention, how long people stay. And again, anybody with background noise hit star 6, Master Smith, I think that was you. But with anybody with background noise hit star 6 and they'll background it out. But the quality of the service. But what happens is the long-term retention is the quality of the service. Most of the quality of the service part of this is that, frankly, retention is going to be as good as the relationship you have with the student. The more of a family environment that you have, the more that they enjoy coming in and meeting and seeing their friends, the more that they are really excited to see you, the more that they know that you like them, the more that they like you, then the longer they're going to stay. So the quality of this service really isn't about the physical component so much as it is about the interpersonal component. The second thing is the higher quality service you have, arguably, the more referrals you have, in other words, the more happy students you have and the more students you have, the more referrals you should have. Although what we've always found is that referrals really are a direct reflection of referral systems. Birthday parties, pizza parties, invitations for friends to come to the Bell graduation, open houses, buddy days, so endless list. But referrals happen mostly because students bring their friends to an event they're comfortable with, not because your students are ever going to be good at going out and selling their friends on them so they should come down and join you. And, of course, there's all kinds of enhancements nowadays with Facebook and one thing or another and getting awareness with their friends and so forth. But ultimately, it comes down to happy students bring their friends to an event that their friends are going to enjoy, they feel comfortable inviting them to, and then you have a good system for converting it. And then the third element, renewals, is very service dependent, but the window is typically pretty short. So I'm getting them renewed or upgraded, you use the word interchangeably here, but I'm getting them renewed or upgraded within the first couple of months in almost all cases. And if I'm really, really, really high-quality service, that's not enough. I've got to also be good at what the NSP people call future-facing. I've got to be good at building a picture in their mind, helping the student, and if it's a child, the parent of the student, set goals to get the black belt, follow through beyond, and make this a lifestyle. And then I've got to be good at them seeing lots and lots and lots of other examples, references, proof that they're going to feel the same positive feelings about this in 3, 4, 5, 6 years as they do right now. So I've got to have all those pieces together. And again, is service quality important? It's extraordinarily important. It's just like quality of your martial arts instruction. It's a baseline. It's a minimum acceptable condition for your school. But even though it's extremely important, it's not adequate to accomplish the other things we need. The other thing here, Jay, in your question, and I apologize again for all the motorcycles in the background. The other thing in your question was upgrade belt SC and price point. You know, it's no surprise to anybody on the call that I'm extremely in favor of pushing the tuition levels that I'd like to see most people set their tuition at are probably an awful lot higher than I could get most anybody to do. And so he's using $229 a month as a high price point. You know, to me, that's kind of a starting point. The anti-upgrade thing, I have seen schools that are really good at renewing students. In other words, recommitting them to train to black belt and beyond. But don't do it at a higher price point. In other words, they're doing a contract extension, but they're not doing it at an increased monthly rate. And I've seen schools do well with that and have good student value and good retention and so forth. On the next step, I've seen schools with that same format that instead of having the students on a 36-month contract pay it in 36 months, they have them pay double the payment for 18 months. And now they accelerated their cash flow, overall improved their growth. And they do better and incrementally better because they're accelerating the cash flow, just bringing in more overall revenue. Just some of the students are going to drop out before 3 years, obviously, and they've gotten paid more towards the program. I've seen other schools that add to that, taking 3 or 4 years in advance, getting some pretty big prepays, and their overall revenue goes up incrementally again, because again, they're getting on the same overall price monthly, annually, and so forth on the program, they're getting on average per student more income. Because again, on a 3 year program, there's going to be some portion of them that aren't still there in year two, year three, and they got prepaid for the program that otherwise they may not have gotten a monthly payment for. Next is I've seen schools that move a student from, let's say, $229 a month to $329 a month to $479 a month. I've convinced a couple of schools that I've worked with to do a $997 a month program. And at each jump, the incremental revenue for the school goes up. And what happens when people think in terms of an upgrade, what their reaction is, well, I don't want to enroll my students at one price and then move them up to such a high price that I price them out of the market. And Master Smith was talking just a minute ago about converting 20% to the upgrade, 90% of them to the more expensive. And so what happens is when you're worried about pricing them out of the ability to do it, you miss the point that you always have an option to give a limited number of need-based scholarships. You always have the option to have Black Belt Club, or in his case, Malik Rice's case, Master Club. You always have the option to give a fallback position that's incrementally less expensive, so you don't take them out of the market. And you also have the option to, you know, enroll them on a 3-year program and have them pay for it for 48 months to lower the monthly payment, but still have them pay the same amount of money. So what happens is every time you dumb this stuff down, you convince yourself you don't have to be good at selling. You convince yourself you don't have to prove it to prospective students or existing students. You convince yourself you don't have to go through a long exhaustive goal-setting exercise because they're just going to gravitate to you because you're so dramatically good that everything is going to work otherwise. And then when you try to simplify and dumb down your tuition price by doing what he says, 229, let's say 229 down, 229 a month, 229 a month, month to month, forever, what happens is you end up with a situation where incrementally you're making a lot less revenue per student. And it may not seem like a big deal, but you may hear somebody who has 400 students and the school is cranking along and you know they're doing $500,000 a year and you go, wow, that's really cool. On the other hand, you know, in my way, the 400 students should be $1 million a year school. And their way, the 400 students is almost always considerably less than that, even at a price point like $29 a month. Jay, does that all make sense?
Makes really good sense, and I appreciate you covering that question. I just think it's really important. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And the thing that I would warn about is, and I've seen, you know, a lot of serious thinkers and universities, and I heard an interview where Steve Jobs addressed this a few years ago. And in his case, it was about, in context of Wall Street Journal and blogs and news sources and so forth. The problem with the internet age is there's all kinds of access to bad advice for free. And the problem with free advice is it's always very expensive, right? And again, Jay, in your case, you know, if I had a serious legal matter, I don't want the cheapest attorney. I want the one who's going to get it done, and probably I want the best one, right? And what you've got to always guard yourself against, especially in the social media age, it's even gotten worse. But with YouTube and Facebook and all this other stuff, you know, everybody wants to have an opinion. And just because some guy has had real good results, or what he thinks is good results, because a lot of them never have had particularly good results, in his one school, with him running it, usually what you find out is you have a very dynamic, charismatic, engaging guy who, you know, is can spin up the place, but it's not a system that's duplicatable or replicatable unless you just happen to be, you know, every bit as charismatic as that guy. And even if that's the case, the problem is you can't go to Hawaii for 2 weeks, and you can't do multiples, and there's all kinds of other things. It's not a system. It's just a person. So just because people gravitate to a person and they get something like that to work doesn't mean it's going to work on an ongoing basis. And that was pretty long-winded. Master Moody, anything to add to that?
I think I just add the general comment that it's, you know, I'm not trying to promote anything when I say this, but it's really not in people's best interest to look at a guy running one school and doing really well, and they're the one teaching all the classes. It's really unlikely that their systems are actually systems and that they work. It doesn't always have to be that way, but, you know, I don't listen to people that are in that position so much.
Yeah. Well, and the second thing is, and actually this comes back to a conversation you and I had a couple weeks ago. You know, there's a lot of people who tell you, you know, top-line numbers that sound good. But if you haven't looked at the P&L and the bank balance, and you haven't looked at their expense structure, and you haven't looked at, you know, down to the penny what they're actually bringing in on the top line as well as the bottom line, you don't know if it's good or not, right? Somebody tells, I was working with a school in San Diego. Very proud of himself, had 750 or 800 students in an MMA school, and thought he was on top of the world, and, you know, he was an internet marketing genius, and he's bringing in a ton of traffic. And I got to tell you, the operation was a complete and utter disaster. And, again, it's one of those, if he said, you know, how much is it going to take for you to take over this business and you be the owner? I'd say, well, pay me $1 million, and I might think about it. It was one of those things where he was just bleeding money out of every orifice. And what it was is extremely high attrition rate. They were going out the back door as fast as they came in the front door. Extremely high overhead. And by the time you had it all said and done, he had 800 students and average revenue of less than $100 a month. You just can't, you can't make money that way. And, you know, we beat that drum over and over and over again, but, you know, give me a student, a school with 250 students grossing 50, 60,000 a month, netting 30, 35,000 a month, and I'm, you know, happy camper. Give me a school grossing 80,000 a month and spending 76,000 a month, and I need 50 new students every month to stay even and, you know, run for the doors. So, again,
can I add one more factor? Usually those schools require the guy. They require the main guy to run it. And that's what I think, you know, my mantra's always been with everybody we've worked with is, you know, we want to, the way you want to measure this is, can you go on vacation for a couple of weeks and things still operate? You have to be there every way. And if you want to teach every class, that's great. But if you did leave, would it work? And if it'll still work, then you've actually got a business. That's the old E-Myth, Michael Gerber E-Myth book that everybody should know.
Oh, absolutely. And by the way, it's a great recommendation. If you haven't read that book, read the E-Myth. And I like Michael Gerber a lot. I've had lunch with him, talked to him a few times, seen him speak a few times. And I will say that he was a one-trick pony. You know, the E-Myth, the book, is fabulous. The rest of the books are trying to tell the story two or three more times, and it gets old pretty quick, I think. But go read the E-Myth, because it's exactly right, and it's exactly what we're providing for everybody, is the systems on step one, step two, step three of how to do it. The other element of that is just that you've got to be eternally wary of not picking systems at random from different people because they sound good, and then trying to run your school. Because, again, an awful lot of what I've done over the years has taken schools who are, in most cases, already doing, you know, pretty good numbers relative to the industry, but they've got a mismatch of stuff that just isn't working together well. And by the time you look at it, they're working way too hard for way too little income in a system that's way too complicated. So you've got to be very careful about that, too. And again, you know, the Internet is a great source of free advice that in reality is very expensive. You do have to be constantly aware and careful of that. Let's open it up now for another 15, 20 minutes for any other questions. And I did have another one here from Paul Grusho as well. Paul, I appreciate you sending an additional question. I'll pull it up in a second. But anybody else have any questions right now, just hit star 6 and chime in. And certainly, Master Smith, if you have anything to add, go ahead and chime in as well.
Well, I was going to mention Thomas Wright sent us that other.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, Thomas Wright sent an interesting question about marketing to affluent women's moms. So that's another one we can address at some point here.
Okay, go ahead. I don't have that right in front of me, so why don't you read that off and let's address that in common.
Well, that was kind of the question is, what do we do to market to affluent? The affluent, I think, is kind of what he was leaning towards, but he specifically asked about affluent moms of kids and what would we do. You know, my initial reaction is that that you should be marketing to affluent people in general. And but you know, go ahead, sir. What were your takes on that for working with people that are trying to make sure that we filter our marketing right so that we get the people that we should be talking to?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Oh, and I do have his affluent single moms. What is a great way to market them and close them when they're in the school, then to keep them excited, what are their hot buttons? And it's a real good question. And I think the first thing I would say is that, and of course I have a tendency to go off on a different tangent sometimes with these questions, I think that we've talked to a whole bunch of school owners recently who underestimate what their current market of people are willing to pay for what they provide. And so sometimes they get fixated when we're talking about prices, whether it's Brandon, believes, I think he's in L.A., whether we're talking about him saying $229 a month, or if we're saying with me for an upgrade, something like $497 a month, or any of those. Sometimes we get fixated and we think, well, they live somewhere where people are rich, and if I look around my area, people aren't rich like that. And we had a conversation with two or three school owners, Master Moody, you and I did, who are, you know, in neighborhoods where they're grossing, their average household income was $70,000-$80,000, and they thought their families weren't rich enough. And we had that conversation with Paul Miller, charging double what another school owner was charging for summer camps and double for after-school transported care in areas. In his case, one of them was an average income of $40,000 a year. The other was an average income of $60,000. So I think the first thing is we underestimate what, at a given price point, if and only if, go back to the previous conversation, you're good at really getting people to see long-term outcomes, long-term benefits, really getting them to see the value of your program and getting them to emotionally believe it as well as intellectually understand it. But the second part is what are the hot buttons for more upscale moms for their kids, and what is the attraction to this? And, you know, parents are parents, whether they're dead broke or they're making $1 million a year, and at a certain point, at the higher ends, I think sometimes it starts to backfire because they get a little detached and it's harder to get them engaged. But parents are parents. They want the same thing for their children. They want them to grow up in a good environment. They want them to be surrounded by positive peers. They want them to be surrounded by other people who are like they are. They want them to be success-oriented. They want them to be goal-oriented. They want them to stay off of drugs, and they want them to do well in school, and they want them to go on to a lucrative career. And I think that's true of, it doesn't matter whether it's a recent Hispanic immigrant making $20,000 a year for their kids, or it's a soccer mom in a Range Rover and the family income is $250,000. They pretty much all have that same picture of what they want for their child. However, as you look at all of those groups, study after study after study has shown that you've got to be very careful of your environment. And this is everything from how the walls look to the doors look, what's on the walls, to what the uniforms look like, to what the, you know, what the student mix is, how the classes run. Because ultimately, households, let's pick an arbitrary number, let's say over 100,000. Households over 100,000 versus households, let's say, under 40, have different expectations about what's nice, have different expectations about what's professional, have different thoughts about peer groups, right? So, and I can tell you, I mean, I love all humanity, and I'm not prejudiced in any way, shape, or form, but if I walk into an environment for the kids, and it feels to me like there's nothing but broke people, and it feels to me like the teacher, whatever it is, dance or soccer, whatever it might be, is inarticulate, uneducated. If it feels to me like they're not setting a good example, I am immediately repelled, not attracted. And so the thing you have to be aware of is you have to be aware of who you put up as the teacher, what their grammar is like, what their grooming standards are like, whether they're bathed, whether their hair is groomed well, et cetera. I mean, you've got to be very careful with all of those types of pieces that sometimes we take for granted. We put an instructor in front of the room, and the instructor has vertical kicks and can jump up and fight and all that kind of stuff. But then when they speak, they use poor grammar and they're inarticulate and they use bad examples and so forth, and we don't think that matters particularly because they're such an athlete. But to a more educated clientele, it matters a lot. And see, it's also, from a marketing standpoint, again, you take that soccer mom in a Range Rover and you have her pull up to the school, and there's a whole bunch of beat up, you know, old Kias and so forth in the parking lot, and they walk in, and everybody in there looks like they haven't bathed in 3 days. And if they just immediately walk in and they're surrounded by people who aren't what they are, that don't fit with what they are, and it's not a matter of being prejudiced, it's just the way people respond emotionally. is they walk in and they fit, they walk in and they don't fit. And I heard this described recently, a school owner the opposite way, is they were out marketing in elementary schools and so forth, and I almost laughed, but it was sad, is, you know, the wife said, well, we just don't like to go in that school because they're too snooty. Well, what that meant is they were a bad cultural fit with her, and so she felt uncomfortable with people at that income level, so therefore she avoided them because they weren't like she was. You know, and my advice, and I was trying to be nice about it, was, you know, maybe you should start going to the hair salon where they hang out, and maybe start buying your clothes where they buy their clothes, and start looking the part and feeling the part and hanging out where they hang out, because you certainly don't want to associate better with all the broke people, because you'd rather have the ones with a little bit more money as clients. Does that make sense? Master Moody, what would you add to that?
Well, I think there are other things that I see a lot of times is, you know, that we get blind to is the state of our school and how clean and pretty it looks and, you know, how well painted it is and those kind of things. And if you've got money, if you're affluent, you come in and the place is dirty, the floors are dirty, you're going to notice that. I think, you know, it's a constant struggle for me. I have to remind my guys, I go in there and sometimes they think I'm being mean to them, but, you know, I'll tell them, hey, that's dirty and this is dirty and that car doesn't look right and this thing isn't right. And, you know, because they get blind to it. It's not because my guys aren't considerate of those things. They're relatively clean people, but they just forget and they get blind to it. So I think those kind of barriers, they become barriers to people purchasing. And the more affluent, the more, I would say the more affluent, the more people are sensitive to that, but it's probably not even true. Probably, it doesn't matter if you have money or not. If the place is clean, you're going to be more excited about going. The other thing about affluence, you know, is we should not prejudge who is or isn't affluent just because they come in a beat-up sweatshirt or some other clothing, you know, that wouldn't necessarily be judged as fancy. It doesn't mean they're not affluent people. And, in fact, sometimes it's the other way around, and sometimes those are the people that, you know, complain the most about money. I don't think complaining about money is not correlated with their ability to pay.
No.
And a lot of times it's the other way around. So I think those are things that are really important. I do agree, though, somebody kicking vertically, we all think in our business that that's really important, but that's usually not that important to people like that, and it's not important to our customers in general. But, you know, our general customers aren't the ones who can kick vertically, so they don't admire that so much. It's just our egos play into that. And we talked to a lot of schools the last couple months, Master Oliver, that, you know, I remember somebody saying, well, my son, it was the dad of the instructor. He said, well, my son's the best instructor in the whole organization, and I happen to know most of the instructors in the organization, and I don't think he's particularly the best, but why? Because he could, you know, he goes to tournaments all the time. You know,
yeah.
And that's not, you know, as well a recommendation for quality instructors that they go to tournaments or they're good at tournaments or anything like that.
Well, and let me say it maybe slightly differently, but my intent is exactly to just expand on what you just said, Mr. Cody. It's so important that everybody from your higher ranked students, year three and four, five-year students, through your staff, and certainly most important, you, it's so important that everybody be in every way a product of the product. And you've got to drill that in every day, is a product of the product. I can't tell a parent that martial arts is going to develop unshakable confidence and then have a staff member who is extremely low confidence. I can't tell them that's going to teach leadership skills and public speaking skills and have a staff member who doesn't exemplify that. I can't tell them that it's going to teach success skills and have everybody on my staff or have me and some of my staff look very unsuccessful, right? And so it's a great line I picked up from Success Motivation Institute. So you've got to be a product of the product. And a different way of saying it is you've got to walk your talk. You know, I've seen instructors who preach health, and then, you know, they go in their office and they smoke and drink. You've got to be a product of the product and a living example of what it is they're expected to do. And if you think what we're doing is purely about the physicality of the art, that's where you get stuck in a $75 or $100 a month price point. But if it's about creating a positive lifestyle and a positive experience, and it's about really growing people, and it's about creating unshakable confidence and self-esteem, that's worth an awful lot more. $300, $400, $500, I mean, priceless. But you've also got to make sure that all of the staff, certainly all of the instructors, exemplify that in each and every way, or it all falls apart. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I don't think people pay $400 a month to kick vertical, unless they're a crazy competitor. The average population's not going to. But I think the average, there's a lot more in the population that are going to pay $400 a month to have their kid be successful in the future, you know. That's why college is expensive. I mean, I go to not an, when I went to my, get my college degree, you know, Arizona State University is not an expensive school, but it's still $10,000 a year. So, you know, $100,000 a year isn't unheard of. That's because it's worth it.
Oh, absolutely. And to even say it more bluntly is they are there really to become like you are. And in a multi-school operation, they're there to become like the staff and to become like the black belt. And if at any time the staff and the black belts exemplify, you know, let's take one example in the kids' school. If the black belts or the staff are really cool to the kids but repellent to the mom, you've got a problem. And I've seen that sometimes where rather than enforcing a grooming standard, let's say, or a pattern of speech or a level of articulateness that appeals to the mom, there's an instructor who's very exciting to the child but not what the mom wants the child to be. You've got to be constantly aware of that. And the first way to appeal to a more upscale clientele, other than, you know, having your location in the right place and making sure your ad messages get to as targeted a group of people as you can, is to become like what they are and be like what they are and have the staff walk and talk that. And then they gravitate toward you because you're one of them. And we're going to run out of time here in a second. Any other questions? Hit star 6. Feel free to jump in and ask anything at all that you'd like. While we're waiting for that, I'm going to point out a couple things. Is we are coming up on just Hurdle Weekend, and I hope that you're prepared for it because you should be lined up in the movie theater. You should have a booth in the theater. We have all kinds of support material. We don't need to cover it on the call right now. You go into the member site. We did it with Karate Kids and Kung Fu Panda and a bunch of other stuff. We have everything from photos of how your booth should look to references on price fields and stuff like that to everything else. So I would highly recommend to make sure you're prepped for that, though, because it debuts, I think it's, they've been doing some previews, word-of-mouth previews, by the way, around. But the movie itself comes out on Friday, which mostly means on Thursday night. And if you have a deal with National CineMedia for the theater, you can probably go set up on Thursday night. It might be a pretty big debut, so it's probably worth it. But it's coming out, and you should be hitting on all cylinders. And second, if you're not registered for the boot camp, or if you have an RSVP for the boot camp, you need to be there. It's going to be extremely, extremely valuable. And our mission is put together the marketing plan for 100 new students for back to school. So we're going to, and of course you're a multi-school operator, I mean per location. So it's going to be extremely valuable and extremely comprehensive. But anyway, any last questions here before we ring off for the day? No, well, let me address one more that I had in my email. Actually, if you have any others, we can address it as well, certainly. But the one I had was from Paul Prager Show, and his question was, and I'm paraphrasing, I'm not looking at it right away, and Paul, if you're on the line, feel free to expand. His question was, he's done his introductory classes for years, where when they come into the first class, he puts them into a beginner class, and then they come into the next class, they go into a beginner class. And he's hearing about recommendations to do a private introductory or a semi-private introductory class, and then wonders if he should completely rejigger his. And let me point out a setup for school is to have a decent-sized classroom and then have a secondary small classroom that's adequate for teaching 1, 2, 3, maybe 5, 6, 7 people at a time. And have that secondary classroom a place where we can run first introductory classes on a private or semi-private basis. Semi-private meaning, you know, 2 kids in the family, mom, and then maybe another family or something like that. And what I have seen work best most often is for the first lesson to be either private or small, semi-private, with only people who are there for the first lesson. And then what we've done very successfully for many years is first lesson is private or semi-private, second lesson is in a small beginner's class. And so we'll put them in the second lesson in the beginner's class, but be very careful. They get individualized attention and they're not getting lost in a shuffle and somebody who's still working with them on a, you know, more or less private or semi-private basis. In other words, they're not just getting thrown into class and pulled back out at the end and asked if they want to enroll. When it comes to structure, is if you are a startup, a small school, or if you're right now kind of a single owner operator operation, you don't have quality staff, you oftentimes end up in a situation where you have to schedule the introductory class into your normal class schedule so that you can have, let's say, 7 to 7:30 set aside for introductory classes on Tuesday, Thursday, and 5:30 on Monday, Wednesday, or something like that. So you have a preset time because you can't be 2 places at once. And when you're in that situation, the first advice is get out of it as quickly as possible so that you have at least 2 full-time people into the school so it's going to run smoothly, and one person can teach first introductory classes and do enrollment conferences and so forth, and the other person can be the head instructor in charge of the schools. And as a master, teacher, owner, operator, I'd rather have a full-time instructor and you're able to supervise and do enrollments and renewals. But Paul's question was, is should he change what he's been doing, which has been put him into a beginner class, and I forget if he was doing a 2-lesson or a 1-lesson introductory process, but put him into beginner class for the first time in a group class, put him into a beginner class the second time. And his question is that if my closing ratios are fine, should I muck with the system? And the shortest answer I can give is that it always comes back to numbers. If you've got really good numbers, retention, upgrade rate, average value per student, closing rate, is if you're paying attention to the numbers and your closing rate is 75 or 80% from intro to enrollment, and 60 to 80% from enrollment to renewal, and your attrition rate is 3 or 4% a month dropout or less, then you don't have good success, assuming that they're at a decent price point. However, I have rarely find just throwing them into a group class for the first lesson to be an effective strategy. And if nothing else, an awful lot of getting the sale and an awful lot of getting the renewal is about personal rapport. And so the more you really get to know them, get to know their needs, get to know what they're looking for, the better off you are always, all the time. Matt, anything to add to that for his question?
Well, there's one other thing that might be relevant. Well, if it's
I think Matthew Smith was popping back in there.
Okay.
Well.
Mr. Oliver, this is actually
yes.
Paul Grusho.
Oh, Paul, go ahead.
Actually what I wanted to add was, you know, we've gone over the numbers. We have pretty good enrollment rate. We used to do the private introductory lessons,
mm-hmm.
but when we expanded and we got larger, we opened up more class times, so that kind of made it so we didn't keep those private introductory times. And we only have one training floor, so we don't have the capability of having a separate introductory class. So, and what we did in our schedule is we put a 15-minute block so we could do intros. And right now, we'll do like a tour and then have them participate in class in the first intro. It's been going well, but I just really want to get that more personalized attention during that first intro. So I was thinking about adjusting my schedule to add another 15 minutes so I had a 30-minute gap across the board so I could do that.
You know, just given your description is, Matthew, let me show this to you first.
Well, I was going to say this doesn't sound like your situation, sir, but for anybody else and for anybody that's building a new school, a lot of times that situation happens. You don't have enough staff to do the intros. And part of the problem is sometimes you've got 100 students to teach and, you know, 6 days a week, way too many classes. So it sounds like you've solved that a little bit, but class scheduling and adjustment can help that a little bit from the staffing. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, if I would have to know, if you don't have any room for putting another floor on there, I still can do an intro lesson on the side of the floor while the other class is going on successfully if I had to. You know, so that would,
yeah,
that would work. To me, that would work. And then, you know, it's a little better. I always like doing the initial lesson privately, I agree, because it's not so much our staffing or the facility or anything else. It's more like if a brand new person is with you and they've never seen karate before, it's pretty scary and intimidating. And if you don't separate them and really indoctrinate them a little bit their first or second class, then they're going to be more intimidated. Even if you close them your first day, they may not have as good an experience when they get started.
Yeah, and again, the in your case, having the 15 minutes where you're working with them on a more individualized basis, and then they're in the school, in the class, and I assume they're not being abandoned. They're, you know, there's still somebody paying attention to them, and they're not just one of 40. Is, you know, that's not a bad hybrid. Is, like, for a lot of schools that I'm working with, is, you know, they may end up with 100 intros in the next couple weeks from Ninja Turtles. And if you suddenly end up in a situation where you have 100 intros next week, the question is, do you have the staff capacity and the facilities capacity to work with each of those 100 on a one-on-one basis for 20 or 30 minutes? Or do you now need to end up in a, you know, more of a semi-private situation? And usually my recommendation is, you know, let's have four or five times built into the schedule as an intro time that you can just book small group intros. And then to the greatest extent possible, let's try to, in addition to that, do private or semi-private intros as well to accommodate the volume. And so it's always a balancing act, but the more you can structure it so that you really get a personal experience with them the first time, the better off you are. And the other thing just keep in mind is that we forget how confusing this thing is. I've told the story a bunch of times, but a few years ago I went to take flying lessons. It was actually a birthday present from Jody. And so, you know, I hadn't been really, other than academics, and I'm a new student in anything in quite a while. And I became consciously aware very quickly about how completely and utterly befuddled I was about how things worked. And I was in lessons with them, I would say, for 8 weeks. And the school actually went out of business. If they hadn't gone out of business, I probably would have been a dropout. But in that 8 weeks, I just never quite understood how things worked. And the guy that was working with me, I never quite caught his name. And the other, you know, they had walked me through how to schedule flight times online and stuff, sort of, but not enough for me to understand it. And it was an extremely frustrating process. And I think we sometimes forget that, you know, while you're walking into a martial arts school, for God's sake, is, you know, a lot of times the kids are intimidated and the parents are worried about what you're going to do to their kids. And we've got to really go out of our way to end up with a comforting and a relaxing, if that's the right word, but a comforting and a welcome experience for people. And on the physical skill set, things that seem natural to us, even like which is your left leg, which is your right leg, which is your front side, which is your back side, are very confusing for beginners. So we've got to be very careful not to jump forward on that stuff or put them in with 20 other people who all seem like they have mastered it, because a new student will jump to the conclusion that it's just them. They're too awkward to do this, and maybe this isn't something they should do. So you've got to be eternally vigilant on all those things.
I would add something that we always shy away from is a parent will call and say, hey, we'd like to go watch a class and see how it is. And I just schedule an introductory lesson. I never, ever let them just watch a class. It's not because I'm worried about my teacher teaching a good class at all, but I guarantee if they're a beginner and they've got any bit of shyness, when they go watch a class and see the other white belt, there's a lot of noise back there, by the way. When they watch a class and see a bunch of other white belts, they're going to look at that and go, Mom, I don't know if I can do that. Well, the other kids are probably on their first or second class anyway. They're no good. You know, they're not really great students yet, but they're going to get intimidated. So we never want them to go watch a class. I mean, I'd rather have them in a class than watching a class, for sure. I think watching a class is a kiss of death. They're probably not going to – they're going to assume that what white belts are doing is bad.
I don't mean to interrupt. I just got a question about that. This is Jay. What about folks that you're having a class and folks just walk in? So there they are, and now they're watching a class.
We intercept them at the counter, and we start talking to them, and we get their information. And the first thing we do is just essentially start an introductory process. If I was going to use your hybrid model and have that 15 minutes, see, the problem is you want to do the introductory lesson then. I don't want to have them come back till, you know, the next day's 15-minute slot. So I still want to be able to handle anybody at all times. You know, my instructors are also trained to do this. If somebody walks in and they notice, and they're supposed to notice anything that's going on in the school, if there's a new person, whether it's a walk-in or somebody's going through a tour of the school, the instructors immediately, no matter what they're doing in any of the classes, have them get on one knee, and they do a quick life skill lesson. So no matter what happens, they could be sparring, they could be doing yelling, screaming, doing all kinds of stuff. It's not going to hurt your class if the instructors know, hey, once in a while when a new person comes in, immediately do a life skill lesson. That's been really impressive. In fact, one time, wasn't that long ago, we had a student come right in, and they basically bullied the instructor into letting them sign up for the leadership program. I mean, normally we don't do that the first day, but they said, no, I want the thing that those kids are learning. And they basically made the instructor sign them up, and the instructor really didn't know what to do. They're like, oh, okay. And I said, what happened? Yeah. And they said, they signed up for leadership. And I said, but they just walked in. Well, when I was teaching the class, and as soon as I saw them, I did the life skill lesson, which is very simple, and they were really impressed. So, you know, that's something I would, those two things in combination, but you need to be able
to handle anybody walking in at any time.
I'm glad you covered that, because you got people coming in. You don't want people to say, I tried to come in and watch a class, but all he did was kick me out and reschedule me to come back in some other day. Instead, you took them in right away and felt them and made them feel at home.
Yeah.
Right.
Don't gloss over what you just said there, Master Moody, is if you know he has intros coming in at 7, you want to make sure the instructor knows how many they are, who they are, what ages, who's expected to come in. And you want to make sure the class plan reflects that all the stuff you want the intro students to see is happening in that last 10, 15 minutes class, right? And then somebody walks in who's new doing the little life skills lesson. That's brilliant. And you've got to have all of your staff trained so well that they know the presentation, the right foot to put forward for new people. And again, you know, what would be very impressive to me as a black belt walking in and seeing something is very different than somebody who's uninitiated. So it is something to really anchor in and take to heart. And Master Moody, with that, we're way out of time. And so I'm now standing in the pouring rain surrounded by Harley. But I hope to see as many of you as possible at the boot camp next week in beautiful Colorado Springs. And again, if you can arrange to take a few extra days, it's right at the base of Cheyenne Mountain. Cheyenne Mountain Resort, where we're going to be, is beautiful. We're right next to, you know, a couple miles away from the Air Force Academy, U.S. Olympic Training Center, not far from the Royal Gorge. I can go on and on and on. It's just a beautiful place to be, especially in the summer. So I hope to see as many people as possible there. And again, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.